Hi, this is Mike Abundo. I'm here today with a gaming professional and a longtime gamer. With me today is gaming professional Mr. Dino Cancioco, a veteran of the gaming industry. And also with me today is Mr. Erwin Nanez, gaming for the last 12 years, right, Erwin?
Yeah.
That's good. Well, Dino, could you tell us a little about yourself, about your background in the gaming industry and how you got into this, you know, as a player and as a professional?
All right. I guess it started when, when I got my first computer, age 10, about the 80s. Definitely, aside from, the typing tutors, my dad wanted me to mess around so I could be a better typist. I played games. And, of course, let's see, I'm 20-ish, so that means I've been gaming for at least 18 years. Yes. And pretty much I've seen everything. I've seen the revolution of the consoles. I've seen how PC gaming has affected students' ability to study. And I've seen the MMORPG revolution here. And, it's only been so like two plus years ago, actually. It's amazing how it's grown. And, I've worked in a couple of companies handling online gaming, and right now I'm still in an online gaming company.
And, could you tell us a little more about, how you got into the gaming industry, what you've been doing recently, your background, your experience, that sort of thing?
I'd rather not mention the companies, but, of course, the grunt. I started as a grunt. I was a game master in the first company I worked in. And pretty much it's fun, being a pioneering sort of person, starting out, learning how to manage the game from the front line.
Mm-hmm.
Spent about, say, 9 months in that job, and then I moved on to another company, same thing, except a little more supervisory, led the small armies of game masters to their doom.
Oh.
Not really. Managing the game, and and right now I'm still leading men to the fray, becoming game in-game support for a company. What have I learned? I've learned a lot, but I'll let you you give me the precise question so that I may offer the information to you in little bits and pieces.
Of course. Tell me something, what does, for the benefit of our audience, what does a game master do exactly?
Okay, pretty much he is a hybrid. He is part customer support representative, call center, the basic call center job. You are there to serve the customer, take in questions, help them with their issues, make them feel better about themselves. No, just kidding. And let's see, you're also part marketing. You are supposed to, advertise whatever new promos, whatever new events, whatever new gimmicks your company has, because you are, in-game. You're pretty much the front line, the representative of your company. You're pretty much also part an investigator. You're a part cop, part PI, because you're also, just like in the real world, the game sphere is chaotic, full of criminals, scammers, people who'd like to deprive someone else of their enjoyment. And you're supposed to be there to, make things right. And another part of the game master is definitely the gamer side. Not only must you, serve the customers, you must also know your game. It's like, just as a customer care representative, and knows about the product, you're supposed to be playing the game too. You're supposed to know the ins and outs of the game you're serving to your public. And, of course, you can't know your game without playing it. There you go. Pretty much it.
I see. So, given that, what would, let's say there's an aspiring game master out there, what are the qualifications for the game masters of the future?
He has to be a bumpers. No, just kidding. Let's see. Surprisingly, most people think that to be a game master, you have to be very, very, very eccentric. You have to be hours and hours into your game and doing nothing else. Game mastering is just another job. Pretty much, you're gonna have to be also very responsible with your time. Sure, you're a game expert and everything, but you still have to keep track of things like customer satisfaction, your company's own interests. So, I guess there's a big distinction between just being another gaming job and being a game master. You gotta learn how to manage the game, not just play it.
Do you see game mastering as becoming, you know, another hot IT job here in the Philippines?
Right now, well, it really depends. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there'll be a saturation point for the gaming industry in any country. So it'll be hot to some degree, like, you know. I'm sure gamers out there, you know, when they see a game master online or something, wow, it's a game master, he must have like tons of items, he must know everything about the game. Yeah, it looks hot. It's pretty hot. But it's a lot of work too. Definitely a lot of work. Long hours, odd shifts. Yeah. So yeah, it's right now it's pretty much a glamorous looking job, but you know, eventually, you know, people get to see that it's a job. You will have fun. Definitely you will have fun. It's not as, at least you're doing something you like, and for a lot of people that means a lot. I mean, sure, you could be counting someone else's money. It's not your money. You're not interested in it. You'd be bored to hell, right? This is your game. You play this game, you love this game, then you manage this game. Happiness. Yes.
Well, let's hear a little from the gamer side of the equation. We have here Mr. Erwin Nanez, a long-time gamer. Erwin, what exactly does as a player, what exactly do game masters do for you as a player? I mean, Viewers whispering make his life hell. Let's hear from the gamers themselves. Let's hear a little about that, Erwin.
A game master, well, basically, alright. In the online games that I've played with, the game masters are usually there, number one, to, you know, help the newer players out, deal with issues from long-standing players. Basically, from the gamer's perspective, and I think it's a rather primitive perspective as it is, seeing as the industry is still fairly new, players will see their game masters as their babysitters. Right? I'm going to be honest with you. I've seen a lot of players out there, especially on a lot of the more established multiplayer online games, that they run up to a game master and ask him for stuff, ask him for like in-game money, favors, ask him to help them level up or something. And, you know, it has to evolve beyond that. Essentially, you know, I would like to see a point wherein the game master is seen as, you know, an extension of the company that delivers the game. He is a online interactive customer service representative, right? But at this point, I just think the community has to grow up first, really. Yep.
So you're saying that the market has to mature, is that right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's getting there, right? It's just that, you know, you see a lot of the market, right? I've seen gaming conventions, and a lot of people are kids, and, you know, maybe it's just a matter of time when they grow up, right? And maybe they can educate the younger people. But, you know, this entire gaming phenomena has to integrate itself into society first before, you see a certain level of, you know, of professionalism with regard to the perception people have about game masters and the entire gaming industry to begin with. Because, let's face it, at this point, the kids, they see it as a source of entertainment. Their parents don't understand one bit about it, right? Yeah, but they spend for it to keep their kids happy, right? But, you know, like, as with anything else, right, people also have to see this, I mean, the gaming industry, as, number one, you know, a business, right? And they will have to respect the professionals, like Dean over there, who work hard to bring these games to these people, keep them keep them entertained. But it has to get to that point still.
I'm sorry, yeah, you were about to say something?
Anyways,
it's a very interesting point to bring up there, Erwin. I'd like to address this question to both you guys. What has to happen? What steps must be taken, to government or the public sector or the private sector or anyone at all? What must be done for the game market to mature so that the industry can mature? Let's ask Tina first.
Well, for one thing, I suppose that's true. As Erwin says, the maturity level of us people, because, you know, we the game masters, or when I was a game master anyway, we strive to help, we strive to educate, we strive to give good service. Sometimes we do feel that the people think that they, just because they pay, they deserve all the concessions, all the consideration, the royal treatment. Pretty much, the royal treatment. And I don't blame them for so they are spending their hard-earned money, or their parents' hard-earned money, in the game. Yes, they want their money's worth. But to some degree, they also have to realize that not everything, just because, you know, this is not their personal playground. You know, just like, you know, if you go to a bowling alley and you pay to use it, it just doesn't mean you can, like, throw the pins anywhere else, right? You gotta play by the rules. You can't toss the ball at somebody, and you know, you have to observe the rules. You will have fun, but within the framework of the game, you know. So that's why mostly our job is to, you know, keep everyone in line and keep everything fun for everybody. Fun, yes. And for the industry to mature further, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, concessions by the government supposed to, you know, to help these online gaming companies start up, that'd be great. Because right now, truthfully, right now, all the games we have are basically from Korea. I'd like to see some of the Western games come in and show their stuff. You know, the European games, or even an initiative to help our programmers, our own talent to make these games. I mean, wouldn't it be better to churn them out rather than just to take it all in from other markets, from other countries? Great for us to make our own games too. And you pretty much just need brain power and a lot of imagination. I don't think the Filipinos are short of that. Yeah.
Well, Erwin, what do you have to say about that as a gamer? Basically, you know, what has to happen for the market to mature so that the industry can mature? Whichever.
Alright, well, in addition to what Dino said, right, I'm gonna end up sounding like a wet blanket or something, but I'm gonna have to bring this up. There has to be a clear definition of what constitutes computer and internet crime. Okay? Because, especially recently with this, you know, game that's fairly popular here in the Philippines, there has been a spate of a lot of people who abuse the system, who deprive people of their right to enjoyment by maybe hacking their accounts and getting rid of their characters and all of the hard work that they've placed into all of that, right? And I'm thinking, you know, at this point, if they catch these people, what are they going to charge them with? I don't know, right? I think that there has to be certain legislative initiatives in the Philippines that will define the penalties, the parameters, and the basic definition of what a crime is in the information technology domain. Now, once that is accomplished, then all of these griefers, all of these people who think they can get away, because as with the real world, in the gaming world, you have rights, you have privileges, and they have to be defended, right? And part of defending other people's rights in that sphere is really to define what a violation of the right is. So if that gets done, and if people actually, get prosecuted for making other people's lives hell in-game by making them pay for it in real life, then, you know, I see that's like a big step forward into making the gaming culture and gaming industry more mature.
It's a very interesting point, Erwin. Actually, I've read some blog posts along those lines of thought. Particularly, Attorney J.D. Dasini recently commented on the alleged hack deletes of Ragnarok accounts in the past few months. I think we can say that. It's pretty much in the news, yeah. It's all over the news, that's true. And the opinion he placed on his blog, I can probably link to it on my blog, is that if such a hack delete did happen, they would be guilty of the crime of the perpetrators would be guilty of the crime of hacking under the Electronic Commerce Act of 2000. Do you believe that, you know, just prosecuting these people would be sufficient? Or must there be some form of restitution for the value of the lost data? Or, you know, the value of the lost characters? Because there are economists who speculate, specifically Dr. Edward Castronova, who wrote a brilliant paper a couple of years back, who basically propose that in-game items and characters have monetary value. What do you guys have to say about that? Let's ask Lena first.
Right. Practical perspective by Lena. So yes, we generally, gaming companies do not encourage trading virtual items for real items. And of course, there are many reasons behind this. For one thing, these are some of the players here are minors. And for them to learn the value of money in such a, well, in a gaming setting would possibly set them up for something, an improper point of view on the resources. I mean, especially that some of these people actually, you know, hack other people's accounts and sell the items they get. What does that make you think? These guys are actually stealing and fencing the items to someone else. And, you know, in the real world, that is a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Illegal trade, well, no, I'm not saying all, you know, all these traders, the in-game to real money traders are bad people. I mean, I've seen how the dynamic works. Some are actually honest businessmen. See, they buy items for this price, and then they sell. And right now, well, to me, personally, it's a gray area. There's a validity in this kind of trading. Information has value, after all. And these items, you know, these zeros and ones, these are, you know, bits of information. So, let's see. How do I see it? If I suppose there would be more, you know, stricter laws, or at least people get punished for the wrong things they do online, this fate of, yeah, the hacking and everything, it would definitely recede. And people would be more careful. Definitely be more careful. They wouldn't just casually say, oh, I'm selling my item for $500. When you can actually be charged for something if you don't give them the item or something. Because there are a lot of people who just, oh, I'm selling this for this much money, give me the item, and I might give you the money. So there's no safety in that. Even eBay, I mean, you can get scammed on eBay, can't you? True. But in the Philippine setting, what we've observed is that in cafes, people people trade items. They just pass on money, get the item, do a few things in the game, and that's it. That's your transaction. And I've seen items go up values that are amazing. Let's just say that some people have been able to buy cars, sell cars, start businesses. It's unimaginable how much people will pay, how much people will sell virtual items. Yes.
Could you cite an example?
Well, I can't really cite a concrete example because I wouldn't want to, you know, rain on someone's parade, but let's just say that, you know, it came to a point that one single item inside an online game would actually be traded for a second-hand car. that may not be much in another country, but in this third world country live in, that's a big deal. That is a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's like to hear the gamer's perspective on that.
Oh, well, you know,
in-game items for cars, that's interesting. Do tell us more about that, Erwin.
All right. Let's just put it this way. From a very basic perspective, especially for a lot of the games that are out there right now, you pay to play this game. You play the game, you gain your items, you gain your, you know, you improve your character and whatnot, right? So at the very least, it's actually a very interesting, you know, topics you brought up. Somebody actually wrote a paper on the valuation of virtual items in an online game. I believe that we should be headed for that, that sort of standard. Because, you pay to play the game. You gain these items, right? I don't see any problem with translating that effort and, you know, all the time and money that you spent for it into real world currency and use that as a basis for, again, laws that, that can actually specify the amount of damages you could sue for, because now you can evaluate the items that were lost, right? That thing, that Ragnarok hack delete thing. I mean, I'm sure those guys, they must have had a lot of stuff in their accounts, right? And that probably must have been worth a lot of real world money. It's just, again, the definition. As Dino was saying, this entire industry is one huge gray area. And until things, until you can see things with a lot more clarity, it's open to abuse. So, valuing virtual items, that's fine. You should just really move forward carefully with it, though. But yeah, that's a good way to go.
Hi, thanks, Erwin. Just to let you know, Erwin is not only a gamer, he is also a banker. So he has a pretty good perspective on, economics and gaming and such. Now, it's interesting you should make that point about how the market should reach a certain level of maturity where people recognize the value of in-game items. I read recently that Sony, which is also the global distributor for several major online games, recently put up its own secure trading forum for in-game items, proprietary to its own games. I was wondering, I'd like your perspective on this. Would the Philippines be ready for that anytime soon? Let's ask Dino, since, he works with players every day.
Filipinos ready for that? Well, it's disappointing to know that even PayPal won't go to this country for some reason. So I'm not really sure if the Philippines is ready for a sanctioned trading for virtual items. Right now, pretty much, let's get our laws straight. Just as everyone said, let's get our laws straight. Let's define, penalties for not coming through with a deal, for depriving someone else of someone's account. Let's get these things straight first before we invite things like potential hazards like these. I mean, imagine what they can do to the Filipino youth. I mean, the students probably stop studying and realizing, wow, I can just play and sell virtual items and make money. So it sounds like a dream, enterprise. I don't think it's healthy for us. Not quite.
Okay. Well, since we're in the company of a banker and a gamer, let's see what Erwin has to say about that.
Okay. Very interesting perspective. Trading in virtual items, and let me just get this straight. Sony does the trades are done for money, right? Like for real money. Okay. I have to agree with you. We're not ready for that yet. Okay. I had always maintained that the culture in an online game, especially the more established ones, is a microcosm of Filipino culture. Right. And my point is going to be very simple. If in the real world, you can get cheated, if in the real world, you can actually get killed for, you know, for like, hoodwinking someone out of real stuff, I mean, you're just basically opening an entire can of worms by, you know, by getting people in trouble and getting people knocked off for, you know, for virtual stuff. I mean, it would really bite if, you know, if like some guy lost his life, like I heard in China, over like a sprite, you know, a little piece of data. Like, granted, all data has value, right? Because, yeah, everyone who's ever been part of a family list knows that somebody sold his name somewhere, right, for some money, right? Every piece of data has value, but right now, the way things are around here, it's just a little too dangerous to start trading virtual items for real money. Not at this point yet, really. I mean, regulatory and even cultural standards have to be set before any of this can go on. Yeah, I think we're right there.
I'm just curious, guys. What were your first games? I mean, let's start with Dean over here, since he already works in the gaming industry. I mean, you know, what was your first experience with gaming? How did this all start for you?
Are you talking about the very, very first game I played? Electronic, right? I guess Pong. And, well, yeah. It wasn't even my own Atari. I played with some other friends. The other one on Atari, nah, it's expensive and everything. So, the first game I played in the comfort of my home, which was truly mine, was, what was it? Mm. Oh, yes, Lode Runner.
Mm.
The first, yeah, it was an Apple II, yes. And, but, let's see, what got me with interested in online gaming, though? Actually, very few people know about it, but MMORPGs, well, you know, they're just graphical versions of what these older games called MUDs. They were... MUDs, or multi-user dungeons. They're basically MMORPGs, except it's an all-text environment. So you actually have to read the monster name, type the command you wish your character to do, interact with people in pure text, no graphics, no nothing. It was totally online, though. And most of them are actually free, because it was just hosted in some, you know, some cheap-ass server.
They weren't for different world.
Quite, they were. They were. Just like MMORPG right now. They have monsters, wandering creatures, NPCs you could talk to. They have items,
of course, in text form, you know.
You just read, oh, this is my sword. My sword. You know, pretty much that they were the predecessors of MMORPGs now, and I started that. Well, I guess it improved my typing skills definitely, because really everything you could do there you had to type. The mouse was useless in a mud; you didn't use it at all. So pretty much that was my first foray into online gaming.
Wow. Guess you've been through the hardcore days.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, how about you, Erwin? I mean, you know, what's your gamer's history? I mean, how'd you start? What kind of genres did you get into? That sort of thing.
Alright. Let's see. First game. Space Invaders and Missile Command on the Atari. Again? Yeah, just like Dino, it wasn't my Atari. It was my friend from school. It was a while until we got our own, really. And then it was on the computer, it was Archon on an Apple IIe. And online, yeah, I was part of a MUD, and it was a MUD that was actually run from the University of Toronto, where I went to school. And it was run by the geeks at the computer science department. But, it was multi-user, it was just like Zork, all tech. Right. And, yeah, coming from a similar gaming, background, I mean, it was actually a very welcome, change to, you know, actually run around and get to see the people you talk to and not type out things and, yeah, actually able to kill monsters and stuff like that. But, apart from that, I think Dino also shares this sort of experience. And a lot of the gaming that I used to do, especially back in college, had to do with sitting around with pieces of paper and chucking dice, really. You know, it's the old tabletop RPG, which we still do right now. Yep. Little thing, yeah. And, you know, a lot of people will argue that the online role-playing game experience is completely different. I have to agree in some respect, but I think the technology is catching up eventually. And, you know, maybe one day, you know, we'll find a game that, you know, may come very close to the tabletop RPG experience. I don't know. But, yeah, that's mainly the genres. Yeah, mainly that entire fantasy genre. Yeah, definitely.
It's interesting you should mention the fantasy genre, Erwin. Globally, when it comes to massively multiplayer online games or MMOGs, that is the leading genre. Here in the Philippines setting, besides, of course, fantasy, you know, fantasy, which is already a hit, as proven by several companies, what other genres do you think would have a chance here? Let's start with Dino, since, you know, he deals with the market directly.
Well, it's true that fantasy pretty much has the lion's share of everything. I mean, even the best games right now in both the U.S. and Korea and Asia, more likely, are fantasy-based. You know, EverQuest, World of Warcraft, from the Asian market, you got Lineage, you got Ragnarok Online, I guess, consider that, you know. Yeah, in Asia, they're all fantasy. The other genres that might make it big would be sci-fi, definitely sci-fi. I'm sure people are interested in sci-fi. Everyone watches Star Wars, everyone watching Lucifer the Matrix, and I'm sure that would be the next big thing for MMORPGs, because, you know, it'll come to a point that people will be sick of slaying the dragon. You know, walking in heavy chain armor, wielding some sword. It's all nice and good, but, you know, I'm sure people's tastes will inch towards other things. And you never know, there might be other genres we haven't really discovered yet. You know, it could be that maybe the next big MMORPG will... Sims tried real life. Yes, but maybe the next big one will be like that. Real life. Present. Like, you can live your life, and, you know, you kill muggers and whatever, and, you know, and you beat the big corporate bosses with your sword or something. No, I'm sure. But anyway, let's not go there. But yeah, sci-fi. I definitely think sci-fi will, you know, eventually make a penetrate into the MMORPG market. Actually, well, we already have quite a few. Let's see. Well, here in the Philippines, definitely not yet. Barely anything, yeah. Sci-fi is sure. But I've noticed specifically in Korea, I suppose, there are other games there that are pretty much futuristic. They have this thing about the flavor is kind of like Final Fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's highly technological, but there's still a hint of fantasy. I guess you can't take that out.
Mm-hmm.
People like that stuff. Yeah, but let's give it some time. Let's give it some time. Definitely, the other genres.
Well, let's hear from the gamers. Erwin, what genres do you think would have a chance here in the Philippines? Because, you know, there are probably some people among our listeners who are thinking of putting up their own startups or whatnot, differentiating themselves or whatever. What do you think would be a hit here in the Philippines?
Okay, I don't exactly know how big the market is for this type of game, but something that might actually work here would, you know, something that would play off the Matrix. You know, something that involves... Well, yeah, martial arts action, guns, lots of guns, more guns, larger guns. Anyway, that and maybe something more, I don't know, being especially here in the Philippines, that we watch a lot of anime, yeah, something along the lines of an anime-themed
game, I don't know, maybe giant robots or something like that. These are things, or dare I say it, maybe even a martial arts game, I have no idea, right? But you look at the general trends, you look at what, what the kids are watching, the younger people are watching, and you see that. You have a lot of these fighting things. You have a lot of, people, and even the entire Gundam thing, right? You have people with the robots and everything. I think, we have far too many fantasy games here right now. Let's rip out the large guns, and I don't know, maybe that'll work. Just an opinion.
Well, you did mention that based on what kids are watching, maybe they'll eventually get into since we all, most of us are into telenovelas, maybe eventually you have a soap opera MMORPG where, pretty much people are there to bag other people's hearts or something like that. Some strange ass genre that, you pretty much come out of the box with this. I'm sure, that's role playing. Definitely. So there's going to be an avatar of you inside the game, and I guess it's up to the creative geniuses out there to create a dynamic game system in which that could constitute leveling up or getting better. But I'll leave it. I'll leave it for someone else's. Yes. Right now, I'm just pretty much a corporation. Mm-hmm. I'll run the game for you. Give me the idea. Give me the game. All right.
That's an interesting point. It's interesting. It's very interesting that you should mention integrating games into real life, making them closer to real life. I've heard things like that about mobile gaming. Location-based mobile gaming or things like that. As a gamer, what do you have to say about that? Given you have a hardcore background, but given that also, we have 13 million, last I heard, 13 million mobile phone users here in the Philippines. What do you have to say about that? What are the possibilities for mobile gaming in the Philippines? Would it be multiplayer? Would it be, especially with the thrust right now towards SIP, session initiation protocol, basically, P2P connections being phones. What future do you see in that,
Wow. Now that you mention it, it looks bright. Pretty bright. 13 million users, huh? Mm-hmm. That's more than any MMORPG right here can boast about. Mm-hmm. So, I guess we have to bridge the technology barrier, considering some of our phones can't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I guess when technology gets a little cheaper and more affordable for everybody, online games via mobile would definitely be quite a market. I'd go in it myself, of course, but... I don't know. I'm sure it'll be trendy. I'm sure a lot of people will get into this kind of thing. But, personally, I'd rather be in front of a PC than stare at my mobile phone and walk around, but that's just me.
What do you think about that? I think mobile gaming has a future in the Philippines, and what kind of future would it be? Would it be online? Would it be the usual little Java midlets we play right now? What do you think?
I'd have to agree with Dino that the technology has to be refined. But 13 million mobile phone subscribers, that's crazy. I'm sure the telecoms would be like stepping all over each other just trying to get at least maybe 1 million concurrent running. I don't know. Right? But, it'll probably, these are just guesses, I suppose, but it'll probably have something to do with Java. Because it'll have to be able to run on any phone, and that's probably the best way to go with regard to multi-platform. I don't know what it's going to be like. It's a really strange new world out there when you're staring at your mobile phone to game, right? But the potential, if someone can come up with a title, someone can come up with the content, and someone can bridge the technology gap that can allow the most number of people to play at the same time. That would be awesome. Actually,
I've heard of some people who are thinking along those lines already. I guess they just need venture capitalists for it, I don't know. Right, but yeah, big market, especially here, particularly here. I don't see it happening anywhere else, actually, because we are such a mobile phone culture. So, yeah, there you go.
That's cool. That's very interesting. One thing, it's interesting you should mention, you know, how the fact that there are so many mobile phones out there would make this possible. Let's look. I'd like to ask for your opinion on the converse, about how, because I've heard a lot of talk, you know, online and in conventions, about how online gaming is helping increase computer literacy, is helping increase broadband penetration, is basically, you know, pushing the internet forward in the Philippines. What do you guys have to say about that? I mean, let's start with Dino, since, you know, You basically deal with these players. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that, about how gaming can contribute.
Yes, I strongly believe in that, actually. For one thing, the most basic, you know, when you see a 10-year-old, normally, without this gaming thing, he'd be probably afraid of the computer, with all those keys, that monitor, look out, you know. Games teach you to be unafraid of technology, these electronic games particularly. And yes, I believe that online gaming in the broader sense, is the key for, you know, education. It's pushing the development of our IT here in the Philippines. And yes, I would definitely support the idea that, you know, you have these kids playing games, you have these kids learning how to use a computer, not just for games, of course, and you teach them responsibility of, you know, having information. Of trading it, of conversing with other people online, you know, it teaches them so many things. Of course, there are ways to abuse it, just like anything in this world can be abused. But the potential for this thing is great indeed. And for us, we're a third world country, and this is a great way to speed up educating our young ones. In fact, I'm sure this gaming phenomenon here has pushed PCs and having internet cafes, you know, into the countryside faster than any other trend. Even the general internet trend isn't as influential as gaming, particularly online gaming. Right now, that, you know, people are setting cafes in some of the most remote places just so people can play. And the gaming companies themselves are reaching out, they're going, they're doing marketing tours all over the place. And it's amazing. It's amazing how many people, you know, you can reach with. So, I see a humanitarian purpose in this game. It's not just for the company to, you know, to rake in the bucks and just because of a novelty.
That's cool. Well, Erwin, that's definitely something interesting. What do you have to say about that? I mean, you know, yourself as a player and as a user, can you see, you know, maybe less tech savvy players, or, you know, kids who've never used the internet before, use gaming as a stepping stone towards, you know, towards this great thing we call the internet?
It's definitely possible, right? But I think if a company really got down to doing something about teaching the users, teaching the kids something other than the basic mechanics of a game, then I think the entire gaming industry will have fulfilled its purpose, and will have done a lot to promote information technology literacy here in the Philippines. I mean, I agree with Dino when he says that, you know, a lot of people are, especially in the provinces, are setting up internet cafes so the kids can, like, you know, jump on the next online gaming bandwagon, right? It really is a very small incremental step to getting them to use the computer for something else. You know?
they already know how to use the computer. They just really have to get beyond using the keyboard and using the mouse to move their character around and, you know, talk to other people in an online game. It's not such a big leap, right? It's just really now a matter of changing people's perceptions. Because, as with everything else, at this point, they see the computer as a source of entertainment. Computers have a lot more than that, right? It's just really just bridging the gap. And if gaming companies can actually, you know, step up to the plate and do that, then they will have done the country a great service to get this entire snowball effect rolling and getting this entire country as a whole to be a more computer literate society. Yeah. Maybe we can actually really get somewhere. Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. That's basically what I've been hearing, and that's basically perhaps one of the social redeeming social values of gaming, right? That it can push technology forward. I'm kind of curious, though. You mentioned gaming being a stepping stone towards, you know, towards other IT skills, right? You both mentioned that. What about gaming as a, you know, what other things can kids learn from online gaming in general? I mean, you know, I'm sure there's been a lot said about that, but I'd like to hear your perspective since, you know, one of you is a gamer and one of you deals directly with gamers. Let's hear about that, Dina.
Well, okay. For one thing, I already mentioned before that, yeah, you can actually, you know, broaden your social network using gaming. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, some guy here plays from the Oro, makes friends, and you can be guildmate with someone in Quezon City, and it's great to, you know, reach out and, you know, without long distance fees, talk to someone else, even just through text. You can get a feel for what things are happening on the other side, like, you know, home stuff and everything. See how things are in the from way up there. And, you know, even with the international MMOs, you know, you meet a guy from Sweden, or a girl from China, you know, it's great. I mean, it really, you know, decreases the size of the world for you. And since you're all having fun, you know, it's a nice, happy, conducive environment. Let's see, what other skill? Oh, connected to what we were talking about before, it also teaches to be responsible. In some way that, you know, just because you're in a game, you're going to be messing around the place. No, you get punished if you mess around, and that teaches them a little bit of something. You know, teaches them that, hey, you gotta play by the rules. That in any society, this contract you have to fulfill. You have to behave like, you know, you can't step on somebody else just so you can have your fun. Aside from that, pretty much, yeah, I'm pretty much the IT. Really, you know, simple hand-eye coordination of the mouse, the ability to type. Oh my god, some people can't type. Even if they play MMORPGs, they still can't type. And, yes. And analyzing the game mechanics. You know, the system behind the game. You know, eventually, in every game, there's an ability for you to customize your character. And what he wears, what he or she has, her skills, abilities, and you pretty much have a choice in the matter in how you develop your character, in what direction. And it teaches him teaches a kid a lot of, you know, analytical skills. Like, if I do this, how will it affect my character? If I do that, will my character be better at, you know, doing certain things? So, pretty much, as long as taken in moderation, as long as you don't spend 14 hours of your day in front of the PC, it can be a very educational experience.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Yeah, I've heard a lot about gaming as e-learning. Yeah, that's kind of a buzz phrase I've been hearing a lot. Well, Erwin, since you're a player, you probably see these things firsthand, and, you know, given the mind frame of a kid, or, you know, somebody who's, you know, I know you're not a kid, you're, no offense.
Yeah, given the mind frame of, you know, of a young learning individual, what can these kids learn from gaming?
There's actually a lot of potential for learning, especially in the gaming environment. Dino brought up a lot of the, you know, mere mathematical, logical sorts of skills, right? But what I think an aspect of the entire, especially the multiplayer gaming universe that is often overlooked, really, is that you're creating communities, right? This entire MMORPG phenomenon can actually be used as a conduit for social education. It's just that nobody's thinking about it in those terms, right? I mean, you look at the communities formed on a lot of the MMORPGs, and they're very primitive. Yeah, you're a part of the guild, you're supposed to bash the other guild on the head, right? And, you know, and it's, if you look at it from a broad historical perspective, like, the societies in the game worlds are not far removed from, I don't know, the Highlands of Scotland, when the different clans are, you know, like, slaughtering each other, right? But there is the opportunity to teach something of value, especially to a lot of the younger people there. If only the older people, you know, got off their asses and stopped picking on the young people and fleecing them of their items and their money and getting them killed by the monsters and things like that. It behooves the older members of a gaming society to really contribute to that. It shouldn't, in my opinion anyway, it shouldn't really just be all about the entertainment. You have a lot of potential to influence people socially in a game. I mean, you look at the, you know, you look at a well-run guild, for example. These people work like commandos. They you know, they're like, they're led by a military commander. They're like armies and things like that, right? Someone has to exploit that potential. The potential to organize, right? The potential to reach a broad number of people just by sheer social interaction. Someone just has to get to the next level. And I'm sure the MMORPGs can be a conduit, not just for entertainment, but maybe for some genuine learning as well.
I see. So that's probably what they mean by the whole gaming as e-learning thing, I guess. I see. Well, that's very interesting. You know, for all our listeners out there who are trying to figure out where this whole trend is going, I'd like to ask you guys, you know, from your perspective, Dino, from your perspective as a professional who deals directly with gamers, and Erwin, from yourself as a mature gamer, what's next? What can we expect from the Philippine gaming industry, and where, you know, what can we expect and where should it go? Let's ask Dino first.
Well, let's see. What do we expect in a year from now? In 2 years from now? Future?
Feel free.
Oh, okay. This year, I believe that you know, all the people, you see, I noticed that online gaming had this trend stage that, you know, it was like shawarma, like pearl shape. Everyone had to get their hands into the business. Everyone wanted to release their own game, you know, just to cash in on the trend. I believe this year will be a culling of these, you know, half-assed attempts to get into the gaming industry. I believe at the end of this year, there will be only the players who are serious. The big players who are serious in offering their online games. And each major player probably definitely have more than one game in their arsenal. That's what I see. Definitely that, you know, the little players, slow, you know, unless they have a miracle game with them, they're not gonna make it through this year. As for the future gaming, definitely, you know, we have barely scratched. You add all the user bases of every MMORPG here, I'd be surprised if you'd reach, say, I'd be surprised if you reach 1/8 of the population of the country, or 1/7, or I don't know,
you barely, you know, scratched the surface. More people still don't go for this online gaming thing. People are still stuck in their LAN games. People are still stuck in their PS2s, their offline games anyway. And, you know, it's just starting. We are at the infancy of the online gaming industry in the Philippines. Only been 2-3 years. And I can see a lot of other better things happening in the future. Of course, you gotta get through the hurdles first, like this, Ragnarok thing.
Yeah.
You know, this is set as a precedent to the things, you know, eventually when this ever happens again, you know, you'll know what happens, you know. The people can definitely demand for their rights. You know, we played that game, we invested our time and money, we just can't erase our lives, or at least a fragment of our lives, our virtual lives, just like that. So, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm very optimistic. I'm very hopeful.
Well, then what do you think about that? You know, as a player, you know, as someone who's seen electronic gaming in the Philippines through various phases, what do you think is next, and where should we go? What should we do?
All right. I've been hearing a lot of talk about all of these companies releasing games. And, yep, it's just about that time. It's 2 years. The industry is still, you know, on the upswing. But we're getting fairly close to a consolidation phase. Right. The online gaming business model is in the process of being defined. And companies who do not have that formula will just fall by the wayside.
Right.
Now, with regard to the games, I see increasing complexity, I see more interactivity, I see people buying PCs pretty soon, because a lot of these games will probably be taxing the technical limits of whatever machines they have at home right now, right? But, again, you know, it's just really a matter of, you know, a couple of companies out there will take the initiative, take this entire gaming thing to the next level. You know, I'm hoping it's the big players, because they're the ones with, you know, the resources to be able to do it. But the ability to organize tons of people, that is basically something that any smart businessman would, you know, capitalize on.
Power in numbers, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, any last thoughts for our listeners? You know, some of them might be thinking of starting a game company. Some of them might be thinking of playing themselves. Some of them might be, you know, I don't know. Some of them might be government decision makers thinking about how to, you know, that policy around this.
Erwin, what was that you said? I think the government decision makers would do well to actually sit down in front of a computer and play one of these games. You know, I would be immensely pleased to see a distinguished gentleman from the House of Representatives sit down in front of, like, I don't know, like, let's go Ragnarok, right? So he can, so he'll get his baptism of fire. Okay? I want to see him go through a game, you know, get pestered by people asking for money and items, get mob drained, get
mob drained. What is that?
Mob train is basically when a player gets a whole bunch of monsters and then, you know, and puts them right in front of poor unsuspecting you and then disappears to leave you to deal with all of them, right? So I think, really, the government decision makers, you know, try it out. Your kids are probably playing it already. You know, ask them to teach you. Because you guys are going to be making the laws for this industry. The least you should do is to play the game. At the very least. Right. Yeah.
Sounds like very good advice. I will definitely spread that around. Any other thoughts, Erwin?
That's it. Thanks.
All right. Well, Dino, any last thoughts for our listeners?
Okay. I guess I'm gonna, you know, target specific group. Kids, stay in school. Yes, you may game. do it after school. Please do not abandon the rest of your life for a game. Yes, it may sound strange that someone working for gaming companies actually tell you to play less. But I really want, a good balance of everything for everyone. And to have a nation full of addicted gamers is not healthy either. No, we want people who are healthy, balanced gamers who have other aspects of their lives in control. And they go inside the game, and it's another dimension of their life. They live a full life. Not one, immersed in just one. Kids, do not abandon your life. Well, actually, it's not just for the kids, it's for everybody. Do not abandon your lives for the game. Stay in school, stay at work, do not neglect your family. Okay? Because, oh my god, I have been there, I have seen how an addiction can destroy somebody. Games are no different than, any other vice in that manner. So, aside from that, let's see. Yes, for the other gaming companies, I suppose? It's time to go to the next level. Increase your standards. Do not baby your audience. Do not baby your consumers. But at the same time, give them great service. Because one of the biggest concerns of players nowadays, that they tell us that a lot, is that you just don't give us good service. We pay for your game and you don't, your game shuts down too often, your game lags, your game hangs, or whatever. It's true, we at my company are definitely doing our best to keep the game on and running for you guys. But if every other company gets the people used to this kind of service, well, this is not going to bode well for our industry. Definitely, if we turn our audiences into blubbering idiots, into spoiled brats, it's not going to be good for the next company who sets up the business. So, partners in the industry, shape up. We're doing our best too, on my end at least. So, that's it. Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Dina Tansioko, from a major online gaming firm here in the Philippines. Very major, I'm just not allowed to say which, but very major. Got me really, really big. And we have here Mr. Erwin Lanias, a banker, again, with a very big bank. A very big bank. And a gamer for the last, how long has it been, 12 years? Around 12 years, yes. Thank you very much for your insights. So this has been a very informative talk. As we Filipinos would say, sa ulitin, till next time. Thank you very much. And game on, I guess.
Alright.